Warning, 30 Screams or Less may contain spoilers about movies that have recently been released. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back, and enjoy the show. Or, if you don't want to waste your time watching the movie and rather have two random horror dudes watch it for you, we got you covered as well. Welcome everyone to 30 Screams or Less, a horror movie podcast where we review horror movies in 30 minutes or less. Today we have a very special guest that we are honored and privileged to have with us. The star of the highest grossing unrated movie to ever hit North American movie theaters, none other than Art the Clown himself, David Howard Thornton. But before we get into it, Corey, last night I was looking in the mirror and you know what? My beard was looking gnarly. And I said to myself, I can't look like this. I gotta do something. So I decided to break out Beard Octane's beard wash and conditioner along with their beard oil. And dude, my beard looked amazing. I'm glad you turned me on to Beard Octane.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, I've been using their products for years and I can vouch for them. And whether you're pounding IPAs or chopping wood, you gotta look your best. Visit beardoctane.com and use the code 30screams10 at checkout for a 10% discount. It helps us. And like I said, the products are absolutely incredible. They're local too. They're based out of Connecticut. So help them out and support small businesses. We're not just slinging beard grooming supplies. We've been using them for a while.
Yeah, we have. David, thank you for taking the time out of your immensely busy schedule to have this conversation with us. Corey and I would also like to welcome you to the start of season 3 of the 30 Screams or Less podcast. David, how are you tonight?
I am doing very, very well. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we are so pumped to have you. Corey has been dying for this moment ever since we started the podcast. I mean, I'm super excited for this interview as well, but it was like his life mission to get you on this podcast since it started. So typically, I'm the one that kicks off this whole spiel, but you know what? Corey, why don't you start? Because we have some questions for you, David, and things we're dying to know. So
right.
Corey, I'm going to let you take the reins. Go for it.
David, I would love to know how you got the role of Art the Clown.
I did a very basic thing. I just responded to an open audition call notice on Actors Access looking for a tall, skinny guy that had experience doing clowning or physical comedy, and changed everything for me.
That's awesome. So Actors Access, actually, were they in charge of casting for The Mean One?
I believe they probably put some casting notices up. It's basically a website where people can go and post casting notices, but then usually everybody has their own casting directors that do that. So like for Terrifier, the casting directors were also Damien and Phil, our producer on the first film. But after that, They had actual casting directors that came in for part 2 and 3.
Okay, because I was looking into that because I've been interested in the idea of doing like voice acting or just like background stuff. I've always wanted to be an extra in a movie. That's like one of my goals is to be an extra in
it's
a movie.
Fun.
So I was kind of looking at, absolutely. I was kind of looking into that stuff. So I think that was the same company that I was looking into based on what I saw with The Mean One. But I have a few questions here for you. During the panel at the previous Silver Scream Con that we were all at, you mentioned that you started off wanting to do theater and be on Broadway. Is there a particular play that you would love to be involved in and why?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big musical theater nerd, especially I love the old musicals going all the way back to, you know, even Gilbert and Sullivan, but, you know, the classics like, you know, West Side Story, South Pacific, you know, My Fair Lady. But also I really grew up listening to the musicals of the 80s, like Phantom of the Opera and like Les Miserables, especially in the car as a child. So I'm like, those definitely have a good place in my heart. I would love to do, especially Les Miserables one day, I would love to play Thénardier in that. I just think he's a fun villain to play, and that's always been a goal of mine. But, you know, there's several other characters I'd love to play, like Fagin in, like, Oliver, or, you know. I like playing the villains. They're kind of fun in the musicals. They get the best songs.
Absolutely. It's kind of like wrestling. A lot of us like the villains a little more because they say whatever the hell they want. They do whatever the hell they want. And they can be, like, chicken shits and do their little attack and run the hell away.
Oh, it's great.
They just, They say things that a lot of us just want to say, but we're too afraid to say it sometimes.
I was just wondering. It's very freeing. I've discovered that just doing conventions and when I dress up as Art, the things I can get away with as Art is
exactly.
Wonderful. I can walk into a whole group of people and flick them off, and they start cheering for me. So it's something about playing the villain. It's the freedom that you have. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, it's liberating.
That's what
just being able to do whatever the hell you want. Go ahead, Corey.
Oh, sorry. I love right around Halloween time seeing those clips of you going into like Spirit of Halloween dressed as Art and just scaring customers.
I had so much fun.
I can't even imagine.
It goes in line to what we're just talking about is like you get to do whatever the hell you want as the villain, and you're just like, they love it. They do.
But I did when I did the thing at Spencer's. I went around the mall. It was in New Jersey. And I was just sitting down in the massage chair, just having some fun. And there was a family, a mom and her like three kids coming out of one of the stores, and they saw me. And I just waved at them. And the mom like picked up the kids and just ran and started screaming. I did nothing. I just waved. And they started freaking out. And like a little bit later, we get approached by mall security. And they're like, what are you doing here? And it's like, oh, we have a permit. And we're doing some stuff. And they're like, well, the cops are on their way. Some lady called the cops on you. So I was just like, yeah, that's normal for me, though. It's just like all three Terrifier films, there's been some kind of police involvement somehow. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm used to it.
Yeah. Do you think like wearing the makeup and like the whole getup and everything that just kind of allows you to be like that freeing? I know a lot of people sometimes they like to put on a mask and they're able to work through some of these insecurities because a lot of people have stage fright, right? I don't have stage fright. I love being on stage in front of thousands of people, perfectly fine with it. But some people, they have to put on a whole shtick or a mask or makeup or something. So do you think that having the whole getup allows you to excel in that?
Oh, definitely so. It's something, I don't know about it, but like when I put on the costume, I easily become Art in a lot of ways. I mean, of course, I could turn them off as soon as I need to, though, so I don't like actually destroy anybody.
Right.
But there is something, it's just like when people don't know it's you, when you don't look like yourself, there's something very freeing about that. And I think that's one thing I really enjoyed about doing theater as a child, even because I had a lot of insecurity issues as a child. I was bullied a lot, and I didn't like myself a lot. And so I really like being able to escape into a character for a few hours, you know, doing shows. And I think having fun makeup and costumes and stuff like that really added to that to help build that believability for myself that I wasn't myself for a little while.
Yeah, and I know what that's like. I've been bullied most of my life, and the thing
sucks.
Is,
sucks.
It's so shitty, man. It's so shitty.
Yeah.
So I ended up kind of using that as fuel because I'm in a band. So I use that. I have this like alter ego when I'm on stage. It's like a whole different version of me, but amped up. So
yeah,
I think of like what I've accomplished being in the band and like persevering through all of this bullying. And a lot of people, they just can't make it past that. But no. I've been able to use it as like fuel.
Same here.
Some of these bullies have actually come to my shows and have like told me how awesome I am and like buy my merch and things like that. And I'm like, that's my little revenge right there.
Oh, and it really is. The best revenge is success, I've discovered.
Yeah.
Because you don't even have to say anything. You don't have to like rub it in their face. It's just existing and succeeding is just some of the best revenge you can have on anybody.
Exactly. And I find that very freeing. And I feel like a lot of people who are in that type of situation of being bullied, they should definitely go on and do something and channel that hurt and use it as a kind of a force or jet fuel, basically, because it can be.
Oh, it was definitely a motivating factor for me. Even back when I was in school, before I was actually successful with this, it was like one of those things where I discovered I had power when I was on stage. When I was the one in control, I could make people laugh and all that. That's like it was like almost like a power trip in a weird way. It's like, this is great. I love this feeling.
Isn't it? It's fucking great. Just being on stage and having that power. Because for me, when I'm not on stage, I tend to be a little quiet and reserved.
Yes.
And just, you know, I do my thing. But then I'm on stage and it's like the complete different version of me. It's the version that like I almost would want to be. And yes. like I'm more outgoing, I'm more powerful, I'm projecting, and people are loving it. And yeah. I don't care if I upset people or nothing like that, because I'm playing basically almost a character.
Yeah.
And there's been times where like the cops got in my face on stage once, and I was in like that was in that mode, right? Where you're just yeah. like, you're in stage mode, you're in character mode, you're not like the regular person. There's be like, oh yeah, okay, let's talk. You're amped up. So yeah. it happens, man. But
oh, I totally understand. You get that adrenaline rush in a way. It's
yes.
just like people that aren't performers don't understand that feeling. It's something unlike anything else you can experience in life. There's something special about it.
It really is. And you know, that kind of leads me into Corey's next question. And it actually has to do with it being in character. Corey, you have a question on that.
So did you have any idea that Art the Clown would be such a phenomenon when you were cast to play the character? Like, did you expect that your face was going to be on literally everything in the stores and everything everywhere right now?
Oh, hell no.
Jeez.
No, not at all. No, because it's like I knew about, you know, Art the Clown anyway, because I had seen the anthology of All Hallows Eve. So I was
right.
comfortable, you know. I knew the character, but a lot of people didn't know him. That was like an underground type of cult type of horror film. And so I was like, well, you know, I knew Terrifier 1 was going to be a very, very low budget independent film. So I'm like, yeah, there's probably not the likelihood of it even being seen by anybody. It's very slim. Knowing right. how this industry is, especially when we're going up against, you know, the big names, especially, you know, since, you know, It had come out and, you know, it's like, oh, wow, these people are just trying to rip off It, even though we started filming Terrifier before It was even in production. But I had no idea. I had hope. There was definitely hope there because I thought it was cool. I thought he was a cool villain. I thought there was a lot of potential to do some really cool things with him, but I was just trying to be realistic, and so was Damien. I mean, both of us were like, yeah, well, you know, we were just very much tempering our expectations. We thought we had something cool, but we know how the world works. Or we thought we knew how the world works.
Right, right. You're like, shoot for the stars, land on the moon type deal.
Exactly.
You're like, hey,
exactly.
all right, well, we made it here. This is great. As long as you make it somewhere, that's awesome. So
exactly.
To see how successful it's been has been wild. And because of this success, I'm sure it's opened you to like all sorts of different opportunities. And my question is, who is an actor or director you would love to see yourself work with, and has performing as Art the Clown opened you up for more opportunities outside of the realm of horror?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm hoping it has. Right now, the industry's been very slow because of the strikes mm-hmm. and everything, so there's not a lot of work to be had in the industry yeah. right now, as opposed to how it was a few years ago. But I have definitely made a lot of contacts in the industry, especially since moving out here to Burbank. It's been really great. But of course, there's so many people I want to work with. It's hard to name them all. But I'm like, of course, actor-wise, I would really love to work with Doug Jones because he's always been a huge inspiration for me.
Okay.
Or Andy Serkis, those guys. Because I like to work with actors that I can learn from as well. And I know those are the type of actors I can really learn a lot from. I would especially love to do some more comedy. Again, I miss doing comedy. And so hopefully those opportunities might come up. Of course, I know like the Wayans brothers are going to be bringing back a Scary Movie. So that makes me excited. I would love to get involved with that in some shape or form. You know,
because I think all you have to do is make a call. And they'll probably parody Art the Clown in it.
Oh,
they'll
I would love
call
that.
It, can you imagine that? That would be amazing.
Oh, I would lose my shit because I love the Scary Movie films. I love the Wayans brothers anyway. I've been a fan of them since, you know, way back in the Living Color days. But so of course I would love to work with them. I mean, there's several like horror directors I've gotten to know as well over this time period that I would really love to work with, like Mike Flanagan, James Wan, Eli Roth, Ty West, Sam Raimi. Guillermo del Toro. But then outside of horror, I really want to work with James Gunn. I've been a big fan of his work for a long period of time, and I feel like he's a fellow geek, and I think we could really have a lot of fun to working together, and I would really like to be his Joker. I want to just keep putting that out in the world. I want to be his Joker.
Yes.
Because I feel like he would actually finally do Joker justice. I feel like mainstream Hollywood has been destroying that character in the past decade or so because they don't get him. They keep trying to make him this creepy character and not the character of the comic books, not the fun, theatrical, over-the-top master wordsmith, but also strategic genius and just demented psychopath. I would really love to approach that angle with the character. You just go back to the roots of the character and really delve deep into that, especially that relationship between him and Batman, because I think that's such an important relationship that they have in the comic books. It's never really truly fleshed out in the films.
You're right. They're basically like a complete mirror version of each other. So it's like complete opposite sides of the spectrum. They could almost be considered like either brothers or close friends, if you think about it, if they both just accepted that they do their own shit. But you're right. In the last like 10 years, they haven't done really well with Joker. I mean, the Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix, I thought was good. But it's not the kind of Joker that we're all used to. We're used to the comical Joker and just like the over-the-top villain. I mean, Heath Ledger, that's obviously past 10 years at this point, but I thought he did great.
Oh, it's fantastic. But that wasn't the Joker of the comics.
Right, exactly. But he's like the anarchy Joker, as they call it, and, which is fine because he was amazing in the movie. But then you had your Jared Leto, and he was like gangster Joker. Which...
Oh, God, don't get me started on that one.
we try to keep this podcast short and sweet. Otherwise, like, we might rant for two hours.
Oh, God, I could go off on that. But, as you know, like, touching on, like Heath Ledger's Joker, as great as his performance was, like I said, that wasn't the Joker of the comics. Is I've even tried to take Heath Ledger's version of the Joker, and I will sit there and do that version of the Joker with the comic book and try to do the dialogue that is written in the comic, and it just doesn't work.
Right.
It doesn't fit at all. The voice, the characterizations, it doesn't fit the comic book. Is like that's what I love about Mark Hamill's version of it or Cesar Romero's version of it, because their versions fit what is in the comic books.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. One of my favorite Joker stories is Death of the Family.
Oh, mine too.
I actually have a picture from that book as well as Arthur Clown tattooed next to each other on my leg.
Love it.
So it's funny you bring that up.
That is like, that's a story that I would really love to bring to life. If I could bring any of the, because, you know, most people think a Killing Joke, but I would really love to do Death of the Family, because I'm not, most people, they get Death of the Family and Death in the Family confused. Death in the Family is when he killed Jason Todd. Death of the Family is where he kidnaps the Bat Family because he thinks the Bat Family has made Batman weak and he's tired of that. He wants Batman to be back to who he used to be. I love that one because it delves so much into the relationship between Batman and Joker. It is also the same storyline that finally made Harley Quinn break off from Joker as well. It's just such a great Joker story because you really start to understand who he really is mentally.
Yep. He's deranged in that one. I mean, he's cutting people's faces off.
Yeah, but it's all because there's this wonderful passage in there that really helped me understand the character Joker. And it's where Batman, I believe, is talking to Alfred and he's talking about how he's been analyzing Joker's face and his eyes, and he's like, there's Joker's eyes, when he looks at me his eyes dilate differently than when he looks at anybody else, and the only time someone's eyes dilate that way is when someone's infatuated with somebody, like obsessed and infatuated. I'm like, oh, that's great. So it's not necessarily a romantic love, but he's just so enraptured by the Batman. He feels that this is someone that is his, who completes his life, that he needs him in his life. He's just obsessed with him. And I was like, that it really gets into that duality between the two characters. And I love it. And I would love to bring that story to life one day because it's such a great story arc. But I don't feel it's like something could be done in a movie. It's something that's going to be on like a TV series where it takes place over a whole entire season because there's so much that happens in that story.
Do you think it would be similar to what they just did with Penguin?
Yeah, that's what I think it could be.
Just like one limited run series type of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it really gets into that whole history of Batman and Joker, too, because it goes, he's recreating a lot of his past capers throughout it, too, which is great. just trying to bring Batman back to who he was. Like, remember who we used to be. These are the things we used to do with each other, and now we're not like that anymore. I need you to be back to who you were. You are weak, and this is not good for me, and it's not good for Gotham. You have to. It's not good for you.
Yeah, because the thing about good and evil, you can't fully understand good without having evil. So
exactly.
They need to be there, and they have to have that dynamic. And I'm assuming Joker is a necessary evil because
in Gotham,
he has to cause this shit so that way Gotham can have hope by having Batman. So otherwise, it's a boring Gotham. It's just a normal day.
And how boring all that is.
Yeah. Nice. And you know, it's funny because I was thinking the same thing, is that it should definitely be a TV show, whether it's on like CW or HBO Max or Max, I should say, because we should get that type of Joker story, and it needs to be really drawn out. I mean, movies are fine, but we need something really dedicated to that kind of Joker.
Oh, I'd love it. Well, just Batman stories like that in general. It's just like, if we could get that Bruce Timm type of writing that we had on Batman the Animated Series and do that in live action form, it'd be so good.
Ooh, that would be amazing. And, you know, and it kind of goes into that, like, question. I mean, we kind of just touched up on it, really, because we saw, like, video of you doing Joker for the Nightwing Escalation series that was on YouTube. And, like, the clips of that have been, like, going all over the internet. So people are really clamoring for this idea of you being Joker. I mean, I've seen, like, change.com petitions, like, wanting you to be the Joker. And it makes so much sense because we all believe you can pull it off. You have that Joker aspect to you because of your background with, like, you know, comedy and just the way you portray yourself, even just as Art the Clown. You have that ability to be able to pull this off. We all believe it. We just got to make it happen. Has there been any talks at all of, like, any of these companies, like, coming to you and perhaps doing this? You probably can't talk about it
yet, but hopefully that's going to be changing. I will say, it was the first time I've announced this, but just last week I recorded a proof of concept video with some industry friends that it started off as, we're just going to do a photo shoot as me as Joker, and it evolves like, well, I have monologues I can do and just record, and then they're like, hey, why don't we just record a scene. I don't want to say what the scene is or anything like that. I don't want to spoil too much, but hopefully it's going to be released, you know, in the next month or so or something like that. It's just like a little 10-minute scene, but just like proof of concept, like what we feel like we could do with this character and tackle it in a fun new way, especially adding some horror elements to it, because, you know, that's he does some horrific things to people. You can blend that mix of comedy and horror at the same time with that character very well.
And you know, that's smart of you to do that proof of concept, because same exact thing with Deadpool. I put that proof of concept video out there and it spread like wildfire. And then lo and behold, now we have 3 Deadpool movies. So just getting it out there, even getting it like all over the internet and people sharing, because social media is obviously, it's huge these days. If this video gets shared, like, once it's released, who knows what could happen?
That's all it takes, is just one person at Warner Brothers seeing it and going, huh.
That's
or
it.
Like, and yeah, who knows?
Yeah, and then we end up having a Joker series, which would be amazing. And then, Corey, we need to make it happen. We need to, like, put it out in the universe like we usually do.
Yeah, we have a reputation of putting things in the universe on this podcast, and then they actually happen. So we're doing it now.
Yeah. That sounds good to me.
It's the wildest fucking thing. Like,
we'll be talking about a band. We'll be like, we want this band to get back together and make music. And then the next day they announce a reunion.
It's like yes. Oh. It's
like, I'll take credit for that. And then Scream 7, right? Scream 7, that's getting Neve Campbell back. I called it on like Scream 6 early. I'm like, she's going to come back in 7. And I want to see this whole series unravel by her being the ghost face the whole time. And she's just been the one in charge. And I put it out in the universe. We'll see what happens. And if it does happen, I want my cut.
Yeah, she it's been her and Stu this whole entire time.
Exactly.
Yeah, because Stu's not dead.
Yep.
Yeah. We don't know. Sure, TV fell on his head, but that doesn't mean he's dead.
They never showed him dead.
Just be badly burned.
Yep, badly burned, and he's got the whole like messed up face. Like, what's the villain from Punisher?
Oh yeah,
Jigsaw.
Jigsaw.
Yes, Jigsaw. Like looking like that or something coming out on Scream 7. It'd be so sick.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Plus, I love Matt anyway. I mean, he's fantastic. Anything he does is gold.
Yeah, now he's got the Five Nights at Freddy's stuff going on.
Yeah.
He's killing him.
Yeah.
He's next who I want to get a signature from. I have a signature from Skeet Ulrich already. And and he's on it. It's like the both of them. So if I can get Matt's signature on that too, that would be amazing.
Oh, and then, Matt is such a good dude too. So you're like, you just got to meet him. He's just such a great dude.
Yeah, he seems very fan-centric. So
he's very
appreciative of his fans. And there's a lot of actors that I see out there that are like that. I know you're one of them for sure, because I met you at Silver Scream Con and like you were amazing. The whole weekend jammed. Your line was jammed.
That was insane.
It took me 3 days to meet you.
That was
insanity. Getting capped off.
I didn't even I had to leave. I went to Las Vegas on Sunday, and Steve and I got there on Friday. And the first thing we did was went to your line as soon as the door opened, and the line was already across the building.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. It's just I feel so bad when people come to like, I've been waiting in line for 4 hours. Like, why? I'm just me. It's like, I'm so sorry you've been waiting 4 hours. There's so much other stuff you could have done instead of just waiting for me.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. That must be such a crazy feeling.
It really is.
You know, speaking of that, how does it feel to know you've made such an impact on the life of us horror fans? And like, how do you come down from that high of just seeing so many people and so many people are just thankful just to meet you? Like, how do you come down from that?
It hasn't even like sunk in yet. I think I've been just too busy to even think about it. It's just, but I've heard from some of my other friends in this world that they're like, you just never get used to it. Yes, it's like, this is weird. It's like, to me, in my head, I'm still the shy geek from Alabama. So I'm like, it's weird to see people freak out over me in public. I'm like, I'm just me, guys. It's like, it's okay. I now have people that come up and they're shaking and crying, both men and women. And I'm like, it's just me. Like, you know, five years ago, people wouldn't have given a shit about me. So I'm just like, it's just me, guys.
Right. It's got to be so awesome. You know, it's it's hard for it to sink in sometimes that like when you do these things, signing autographs, taking photos, things like that, because I've done that stuff too. And it doesn't hit me at first because I'm just doing it. And afterwards, I'm like, holy shit. I did that. I can say that's on my fucking things I've done in my life list.
Yeah. It's definitely cool, though. It's definitely cool. It's just what's really weird to me is when it's other celebrities that I've admired for a long time that freak out over me. And I'm like, no, dude, I love you. Just like, stop. Get up off the floor.
Never Scream with Eli Roth. He was like right next to
gosh.
You.
That was crazy. It was like my manager just comes up to him when we're doing our photo ops because Eli was eating lunch. He's like, Eli, you want to come over and get like a photo with Dave in costume? He's like, oh yeah. And this is so cool. It's like now I like Eli and I chat from time to time. You know, he sent me a message on my birthday, stuff like that. It's like he's such a cool dude. It is that's what I've really liked getting to know is these celebrities as people, because it takes a lot of the angst away when you realize, oh yeah, we're all just geeks usually that just got lucky, and we're all kind of in that same mindset like, how the hell is this all happening to us? It's just,
I think we all have to be a little geeky to do the things that we do. I mean, otherwise we'd just be working full-time jobs. We all have to be a little crazy, and we all have to be passionate about these art forms, movies,
it's
music,
so
podcasts, all this stuff. So we're all
so
built different.
Yeah. It's like, I cannot see myself sitting at a desk job, you know, 9 to 5 every week. I'm like, oh God, no, that just seems miserable.
That's what I do. And I can confirm.
It can confirm as well.
Yes. I mean, I waited tables and that was miserable. I was also, you know, before that, I got a degree in elementary education, and I just can't imagine doing that anymore. I'm just like, oh God, having to do lesson plans and grade papers and all that every day, day in, day out, having to go to, you know, conferences. And I'm like, oh God, no.
What you do now is way more fun, I'm sure.
Oh, it's definitely more fun. I'm not going to lie. Oh, yeah. I get to travel and meet people and just hang out and make movies. I get to play pretend for a living. It's the best thing in the world.
It's wild. What a wild concept.
Definitely wild.
And, you know, like going back to the whole working as a waiter thing, you know, you can kind of think of it almost as a learning exercise when becoming an actor, because you're having to interact with people and use your body language and portray yourself a certain way. And
you're
learning to cater yourself to the people that you're talking to. And I do that all the time when I'm on the phone with people. I have to match a certain tone, certain way, and you know, just kind of work with that. I wouldn't say it makes me skilled to be an actor or anything, but these are all things you can do to get this kind of experience and being comfortable with interaction and like conveying certain information, whether you're just saying, oh, these are the specials for today, and you're being exciting about it.
Yes.
But you can take all these things and learn from it. But I'm glad you're not doing that stuff anymore, because now you're a horror icon.
Yeah, this is definitely a lot more fun. I will definitely say that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure most of us in this horror community would love to be in this kind of situation. So for you to actually make it happen is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Definitely feel very lucky. I mean, because I remember my days as a struggling actor, just like, God, that must be so nice being able to do that. Just not having to do anything else. You just go out there and make movies and do what you love for a living. It's like, now I get to do that. So I'm very, very grateful for it.
I don't doubt it the slightest bit, because there are a lot of actors, actresses out there that just want to be able to do this, and that's their dream. And it's dog eat dog when it comes to that industry. You either make it or you don't. And
it's so
like
true.
It's like lightning strikes type deal, or it just happens. If it's meant to happen, it's going to happen. And in your case, you had this opportunity of being a clown, and now it's really taken off. And you now have this like opportunity, basically the world at your feet, to do all these different things. It's amazing. It's really amazing. But Corey, you have some additional questions, because we got a few here. I mean, we're kind of talking the shit and all that, but yeah, we got some more questions for you.
And we're not trying to take up too much of your time tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, we like to keep it short and sweet, but you know, we'll stick around as long as you want to stick around.
Okay.
So what has been your favorite kill between the three films that you've been in so far in this this franchise?
Mm-hmm. My favorite one so far has been the Santa Claus kill in the bar scene in part 3.
That's a good
one. That was just fun all around. It was like, first of all, I just felt like a Batman villain in that one with the freeze ray. I'm like, this is awesome. This is so much fun. But it's just also just being able to work with those guys. I mean, it's like, you know, I've been watching especially Clint Howard and Danny Roebuck my whole entire life in movies. And Bradley, I've seen him in so many TV shows and movies over the years. So I was like, I was geeking out on set just being in a scene with these guys and all of us just being able to do our thing. And we just played for, you know, a whole entire week. And especially Danny and I, with the whole hostage situation thing, he was just like, he had, you know, the lines there, but then he just started making up stuff and just started just throwing material towards me. He knows how to be such a great straight man in a scene. So he knows how to throw you a joke. He was just giving me so much to work with, and we just played. We were just having so much fun. There was a lot of laughing going on that week, for sure. But that's not even like, unfortunately, we weren't able to do the whole entire scene like we wanted to. It was actually going to end on a bigger note, but we literally ran out of time. I was going to take coal and light it on fire and stick them into Santa's eyes at the very end.
So, oh, that would have been great.
Yeah, completed the whole snowman look, but we just ran out of time. So we just had enough time to do the carrot. But that still, it sold the look we were going for with the snowman. But I was like, oh man, that would have been so much fun doing the coal thing. But still, I think it's such a cool kill. Yeah, no pun intended, but...
Yeah, I remember hearing an interview with Damien saying that he wanted to have like a frost gun involved or something with the third movie. And that's how you guys ended up doing it. And Steve and I, we drove, it was like an hour and a half away. We had to drive to see this because we're in New Hampshire and we didn't get it anywhere near us. But the scene where you just walk by the window and you just do that quick take because you saw Santa, the whole theater, I've heard people laugh as loud as a comedy movie, as I heard people laughing during that scene. Because the reaction that you had, unreal.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. It was the reaction like kids have when actually seeing Santa. Like, first time in the mall, they're like, oh my God, it's Santa. And that's like kind of the reaction you had. And then when you walk in and you just barrel through the drunk girls and just go straight beeline to Santa.
They're the luckiest people in this whole entire franchise.
I said the same thing.
Because they survived.
They survived. Yeah.
They didn't
because he
hurt.
Didn't give a fuck about them. He just goes right through them. Just boom. I'm going after Santa. This is, I'm on a mission. Get out of my way, witches.
I love that scene particularly because, like, the Terrifier 3 poster came out obviously like a year ago at this point, but you're wearing Santa's face around your neck. And I'm like, how does this tie into the film at all? And how is he wearing a bloody beard? Oh, that's how it's got Santa's beard.
Oh, well, that's like one of the details that I loved in the prosthetic that I wore for the beard is like it actually has part of his lip still attached to it.
Yep.
Which is, I think, is hysterical.
That's awesome. I must have missed that little detail because I only seen it once in theaters. I haven't watched it on streaming yet, which it's out now.
I made my mom watch it last week or during Thanksgiving. I was at my mom's house. I was like, you want to watch a Christmas movie?
Sure.
Oh my God. I love that too. There's like, there's this video that someone had put online where they went to go see it. They told their sister that they were going to go see a family movie for Christmas or something like that. And so it's the first scene, it gets to look, you hear little Timmy getting killed. And you just see, like, she turns the camera to her sister and she's freaking out. She just turns and goes, you told me this was a family movie. It's like, well, there is a family.
There it is. I was just going to say the same thing. There's a family in there. So she's not wrong.
It just doesn't go well for that family.
Not at all. I mean, multiple families. There's a lot of dead families. Yeah, a lot of dead families in that movie.
Yeah.
Especially the end with, like, that whole family. Like, the whole fight between you and Sienna at the end was so badass. And it's definitely going to go down as one of my favorite end movie fights because I love a big fight feel in a movie. Where, I mean, RoboCop versus RoboCop 2 in RoboCop 2. That's a ridiculous fight. Things like that. I love those kind of battles. And, man, that scene. Like, how long did it take you to film that scene? Because it was so awesome, the whole entire thing. Perfect.
Oh, that took several days to film. I think like 3 or 4 days because
that makes sense.
Yeah, it was. There's so many things that happen in that, and it's like I have to, you know, give a tiny tip of the hat to our stunt coordinator Drew because he came in. This like this whole entire fight scene wasn't really spelled out in the script. It just said Art and Sienna basically have a sword fight scene with a chainsaw, and that's basically how it was. So Drew comes in and sees the setup in the house, and he just looks at it and comes back. It's like, okay, I have it, and he just. You're going to do this, and just choreographed it right there on the spot. And then, there's so many people I got to give, you know, their dues to of like our both of our stunt doubles, you know, mine, Bobby McFarlane, and hers was Jenna Helmuth, that they did an amazing job. But Lauren also stepped it up in that. She did a lot of her own stunts in that scene. Like when Bobby lifts her up and like body slams her on the ground, Lauren really did that. I didn't even know they were going to do that. So I was watching them film it and then he just lifts her up and body slams her. I let a whole, holy shit, right there. Like, everybody just starts like, I did not know that was going to happen. That was awesome. It's like, I just really have to, you know, give everybody their dues and that. I still got to do a lot during that, but there were certain things that I just could not do. And Bobby could do it much better than I can. And I'm glad he took the hit for me on the ball grab too. So I was like, okay, glad I didn't have to do that. Because it's like, well, that's not good. That's not good. But boy, we were giggling a lot during that.
Yeah. Well, that's their job as stuntman. He's a stuntman, right? Yeah. Like, or a fight coordinator, stuntman. Well, they tend to do both. Being stuntmen are usually fight coordinators. So for them to have that kind of job, it's a crazy job.
It's a crazy job. It is such a crazy job.
You have to be a different type of human being to do that kind of shit.
It's such a cool job, too. It's just like, I am always just fascinated with stunt actors. I just think they are the coolest people. Anytime we have stunt actors on the set, I always want to go over and just chat with them because I love them. I just think what they do is so cool. And I feel like they are so undervalued in this industry. They don't get their dues like they're deserved. I feel like The Academy Awards needs to have their own category specifically for stunt actors. and show it on TV. Don't have one of those awards where it's given out, you know, off screen or something like that. They need to be recognized for what they do, because they make us look awesome, and they're the ones doing the awesome shit out there. And I'm like, it just blows my mind, some of these, because they're risking their lives, literally risking their lives to do this type of stuff. And it's so cool.
It really is. So it's like the same shit as like Tom Cruise. Like Tom Cruise does a lot of his own stunts. I mean, if we didn't have stunt coordinators, every actor would be forced to have to do these ridiculous stunts for these movies. And I bet there's a lot of people would be like, I'm not jumping out of a plane for this role. Yeah. Forget it. So what is your thoughts on actors performing their own stunts? Like, I mean, there's some stunts that you can easily do, but these big crazy stunts where actors are taking the initiative, being like, I'm gonna freaking ride a dirt bike down a ramp and launch myself off a cliff. Tom Cruise again. How do you feel about these actors doing these crazy stunts and potentially risking the movie?
It's definitely a dangerous thing to do, because there's so much, especially like, you know, something like that with Tom Cruise, like there's so much riding on him surviving.
Yeah.
So like, that's a huge risk, because there's so much I can't do that these stunt actors do, because I'm not trained to do this. That is not my background. These actors have been trained. They've gone through years of training to do this. They've been conditioning their body to do this. They know how to land properly. They know how to take a punch. They know how to fall properly. And sometimes you have to put your ego aside as an actor to do this and let someone else come in and do the stunts for you. And that's what I've done. Because there's sometimes like, I'm like, if I was in my 20s, I'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. I wouldn't do that. Now I'm like in my 40s. I'm like, yeah, that looks like that's going to be painful. And I think I'm going to be sore all day tomorrow if I do that. So, yeah, go ahead, Bobby. Go right ahead. Please, please, please. But then, like, you have someone like Lauren, who has actually trained in martial arts, and she's got some stunt background and stuff like that. Or Jenna Cannell, that was in Terrifier 1. She's done a lot of stunt work herself as well. So, you know, when it comes to those actors, like, you know, like Jason Statham, he started out as a stunt actor, and he's progressed. So it's like, those are the ones where, like, you know, they're trained for this. So if they think they can do the stunt and they got the time to practice and do it, they go ahead and do it, but also have the stunt actor there on set just in case.
Exactly. Just have them there in case it's like, okay, no, I can't do this. I could risk the movie. And it's like, okay, tag them in. And they, you know, they do it and the movie continues. I know Danny Trejo has been very vocal about actors doing their own stunts, and the whole idea of stuntman is like for this sole purpose of making sure that these stunts happen, the movie continues, because a lot of actors, they can really risk the livelihood of everyone involved if something happens. So like, if let's say you were to do your own stunts and you did like a fall down the stairs and you break your neck, all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we have to like get a whole new lead for this movie and start from the scratch.
Yeah.
So
that happened with Incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
Luckily,
they lucked out. They lucked out with the Crow, because they had like a stuntman who was really close to looking like Brandon Lee, but they used CGI to face replacement, which is obviously easy these days to do face replacement, but it's unfortunate. But yeah, it's kind of the same deal where, you know, they're doing these stunts. Stuntman could have easily done that, but he decided to do the firefight himself, and this is what happens.
Well, see, I look, you know, you were talking about the stairs, because, you know, falling downstairs, that's one of the most dangerous stunts that, stunt actors can do, because so many things can easily go wrong with that. You just fall the wrong way, you break your neck. It's very simple. And that's what when I was watching John Wick 4 last year, I was like, the stunt actor that Keanu Reeves had in that movie that had a fall down that, you know, 100 flight of stairs repeatedly, because they did it multiple times, I'm like, I was watching that movie and I was like, oh my God, this guy just keeps tumbling and tumbling and tumbling and tumbling and tumbling. And then he goes back up the stairs again and gets kicked down again, tumble. I'm like, Jesus, I hope they paid this guy a lot of money to do that stunt, because that is difficult. That is such a dangerous and difficult stunt to do, but it looked amazing on screen.
Yeah. And that was like an endless staircase in that movie too.
Yeah. He was like, oh my God, he just keeps falling. It's just like, geez, Louise. It's like, that was, but.
Gotta hurt so bad.
God.
Like, just unless they're so conditioned to it that they're like, pain ain't nothing. Pain don't hurt. Like Patrick Swayze said in Roadhouse, well, pain don't hurt.
It's horrible. It's because, you know, that's the thing. It's like they do get hurt. I have a friend that's a stunt actor that recently, he was actually my stunt double for The Mean One. And he tore his, I think, a tendon or something like that in the back of his foot or calf or something like that. And he's been out for months. And it was just simply just, he just started running the wrong way and it just snapped. And I was like, oh, geez, but it's taken him out of the job for months and he's slowly recovering. And I'm like, that's horrible.
It's awful. And like, they probably don't get paid that whole time unless they have insurance, which might help, but it all depends on what they have for insurance or something
like
that.
It all depends. It all depends on the contracts they have with the films.
Yeah,
if
and
they can
I
get
know
some compensation.
Yeah, I know there's like the Screen Actors Guild. Are you part of like the Screen Actors Guild you are. Okay, so that does insurance and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
It does.
But you,
okay.
That's the thing with Screen Actors Guild, you also have to make about a little over $20,000 a year in SAG projects to actually qualify for the insurance. You don't just get it automatically.
Which makes sense. I mean, you can't just be like a part-time employee and get full-time health benefits.
Right. But right now, it's kind of sucks since the industry's been so slow for so many actors. It's like this past year, just because of Terrifier, I was actually able to get my insurance for the first time through them. It's just because like a lot of these jobs don't pay you enough to even make what you could make for the insurance for the year.
Yeah. Insurance is super important, obviously. Like that's one thing I know I have to have if I'm working a job. I would love to work for myself one day, but that's like my biggest concern is not having insurance, because you have to have insurance these days.
That was ridiculous.
It's insane.
As we've seen in the news recently.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it's like, boy, our insurance programs suck here in the United States.
Oh, it's awful. It's so bad. But yeah, having insurance, super important to have these days. But yeah, we've seen it in the news, that's for sure. So, Cord, you have more questions, obviously, right?
Yeah, I wrote a couple
because
more.
I know you were talking about Screamboat earlier.
Well, first, can you go into detail about the kill in the third film that almost made you vomit? Is this
true? Yeah, that was Aunt. Yes, that's true. It was Aunt Jess's kill. It was.
Oh, the rat?
I can't. Yeah. Oh, it's just the puke in it. I don't like puke. I can't handle puke. And we found a lot more of her puking than what you see in the movie. And I think they just did that intentionally just to mess with me.
Is this a prank on you at that point? Because they know.
Oh,
it
I feel like
you?
It. I feel like it because Damien knew that. He was just like, and they're like, and I'm like, can my double come in and sub in for my arm right now? Or and it's like, no, Dave, your face is totally in the shot. You got to be here for this. I'm like, I hate you guys.
Damn,
my face is not in the shot. My face is not in the shot when she pukes. I'm like, great, thanks, guys. And like Samantha, who plays Victoria, came in, eating this horrible smelling bag of corn nuts, and she's just up in my face breathing. It's like, what's wrong, Dave? Come on.
While in makeup?
Oh, it's just gross. It was just so many factors. It was hot in there and it smelled bad because they used this cream of mushroom soup that just smelled horrendous.
Oh.
It was just gross. It was so gross. And I'm like, I hate you guys. And so, I was really fighting, not trying to throw up during that. So that was definitely a challenge. But I made it. I was very proud of myself. But I do not like throw up. I hope whoever I marry one day has a much stronger constitution when it comes to throw up, because I cannot handle it.
Oh, man.
So, like, there's one thing I always like to say on this podcast, commit to the bit. And that's what you did. You commit to the bit. You powered through it. You're like, this is going to make me sick, but I'm Art the Clown right now. I'm just going to make it happen. I'm going to do it. And the scene came out great. And honestly, I think that's the worst kill in this whole movie.
Oh, it's horrible.
It's awful. It is so insane.
Awful.
So everyone talks about the shower scene being the craziest kill. No, I don't think so. Rats climbing into someone's throat and coming out their insides or through the stomach. Crazy.
This is horrible.
It's awful. You got to wonder how Damien even thought of that craziness.
Oh, it came from that there's a... an old torture method where they would put rats on someone's stomach and they'd put like a bowl over it and they'd light it on fire, because the rats would have to burrow out through the heat to get away from the heat, and this so they would burrow through the person. And that's where he came up with the idea.
Oh, so it was like reverse, because I mean, obviously in the stomach, you have the stomach acid, but maybe the rats felt like, oh, geez, this stomach acid, this is hot, got to get the hell out of here. And, you know, Art the Clown then cuts the stomach open, and then the rats go out real easy.
Yep.
so insane. I mean, I thought it was bad right away when he's just jamming, like, that thing into the throat.
Oh, it's
and
horrible.
Then I'm like, oh, no. I can already see what's happening here. Something's happening, like hot coal or something. Like, yeah, hot coal, like, you know, for Christmas time. I was thinking that initially. And then we see rats. I'm like, oh, shit. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
I remember sitting next to Steve in the theater, and that scene started happening, and I saw him kind of slouch in his seat a little bit.
I'm like, oh, God.
It's like, oh, God, no. It's horrible. And that's also a scene where there's not a joke at the end of that. That is very serious. That's like the one kill scene, and there's not a punchline in it.
Yeah, because usually there is. I mean, in the shower scene, there's you doing
the
angel in the blood, and that's the punchline right there. Or the more menacing one where the guy is basically hacked up on the floor. He's not fully dead. And then there's the girl that's still in the shower. She's the one that was like, oh, we want to see what it's like in, you know, the evil in the eyes and, you know, as someone's dying. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Yeah.
But, and then you take off the glasses and you do that whole smile, which is very sinister. And that's, you could think of that as the punchline too before obviously she dies. But yeah, this scene was just business as usual and moving on to the next task in that room, which is obviously Jonathan's head, which we think is Jonathan's head. I think he's going to come back to life later as some sort of talking skull. I don't know.
poor Yorick. Know,
we're getting into the whole territory of like mystical. And I was actually thinking that you mentioned you're a gamer, right?
Yes.
On the Jim Cummings, right? Cummings podcast, that you're a gamer. So I want to bring this up real quick before I hop into that little question. That's kind of, it's an off-brand question, but have you ever played God of War?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. Mimir, like, it's his name's Mimir, right? Where he's hanging out by the side. I'm thinking that the head's going to come to life. She's going to have, like, the head hanging down by her side and going after Art the Clown type deal. We're basically getting God of War.
Almost like Lollipop Chainsaw as well.
Oh, yes.
That's a good game.
Yeah.
That is a good game.
Oh, that's funny. No, I haven't thought of that. That would be hilarious.
Oh, geez.
Sienna, come on.
Sienna.
Punch him.
Behind you. Oh, blind. God.
Fuck you, Art. Dick.
That the line where he just goes, Dick, kills me every single time.
Oh,
I die laughing because especially how I know, you know, Elliot is just like the way he delivers that line just kills me, because Elliot is like the kindest guy in the world. It's like anytime I hear him cuss, it kills me. I'm just like, oh my God. It's like hearing a little kid cuss. It just makes me die. I love it.
Yeah, there's like no oomph to it. It's more just like a kid saying a swear.
Yes.
It's like too
Dick.
Funny.
Dick.
Sounds like Fred Durst.
Oh my God. We've been playing Marvel Rivals lately, and it's fun as hell, but Spider-Man sounds like Fred Durst.
And oh my God.
So every time we're playing and I hear Spider-Man say something, I start talking like Fred Durst to Corey, and he can't keep it straight. He just starts dying laughing. And oh God, last night when I was like, yeah.
You should check that out, David, if you haven't. It came out last week.
I've been hearing good things. Since I've been on the road so much, I've been having to catch up with everything. I've recently finished playing Astrobot, which is amazing.
Oh, yep.
But I just started playing Black Myth Wukong, and I'm like, oh, so good.
Dude, I uninstalled that game twice before I beat it.
It's tough. It's tough. But it's fair at the same time, though, because I'm like, okay, you just have to get good at these bosses. You have to just figure things out.
Yeah, it's an incredible game. Like, the visuals are amazing. But yeah, I rage quit that game twice. Like, legitimately called it off right off my PlayStation.
I understand. I was that with Bloodborne. I literally got a migraine from playing Bloodborne. I'm like, fuck this. I'm not having fun.
Yeah, I love the Souls-likes games, and that happened to me a lot with Elden Ring, even though I feel like it was a bit more forgiving, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My first one I actually beat was Sekiro, and I was like, that one... Whew, that final boss battle, man, it was just like, it took me about 4 hours and I beat him, and I was literally screaming at my TV like, yeah, fuck you, I was just like, because I was just,
I never beat that one. I think I made it to like one of the first major bosses, the electric guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I uninstalled the shit out of that game, and I never went back.
It's tough. It's a tough one. You had to get really good at countering in that.
Yeah.
The last game I rage quit, Cuphead. That game.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Nightmare. There was one, same thing, though. Like, I beat this one boss that I've been trying to fight for the past 4 hours, 5 hours maybe, and I finally did it, and I threw my controller up in the air to celebrating and damn near broke it. But... just freaking threw it up like, finally, yes.
Beating a boss in those types of games is so rewarding.
I still remember, like, I think it was one of the Mortal Kombat games back in like the early 2000s. Which one was it? I just remember it's like in like the story mode, I had to fight Scorpion, and it was like the most bullshit fight. It was such bullshit. He would constantly block everything you're doing. Just block, 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 and you can't block him. And I was just like, I got so mad. I literally snapped my controller in half in my hands. I was like, oh shit.
Time out.
I think I know what you're talking about, too, because he would, like, teleport behind you in the fire.
Oh, it pissed me off so much. It's not one of the more recent ones. It was, like, back in the early 2000s, so it was like 2004, I think. It was, like, maybe it was Deadly Alliance or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the one where it had the RPG mode where you could play as just a random character and you constantly get other characters' abilities.
I vaguely remember it, but I can't remember the title.
But that's when I was fighting Scorpion to get one of his abilities, and he was just so impossibly hard. It was just like, this God. Is not fair. This is not fair at all, because he's just constantly block, 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 block. I'm like, I can't even get a punch in.
It's awful. I hate when that happens. It drives you fucking crazy.
It's like, I'm hitting the block button. Why are you not blocking? That's one of my biggest pet peeves in games, is when, like, an enemy, even, like, just the random, you know, grunts can just go through one of your combo attacks, but you can't go through one of theirs. So it's like, they can disrupt you, but you can't disrupt them. I'm like, fuck you.
This is crazy. This is crazy. What the fuck?
It's like, I'm in the middle of comboing you, and you can just go, bink.
Yeah, just cook a combo breaker. It's like, oh, fuck. Yeah.
Oh, pisses me off.
That kind of goes into like the question, what is your favorite video game of all time?
It's probably Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Ooh, okay, that's a good one.
Good one.
Yeah, Zelda is my favorite franchise. It's just, I don't know what it is about Zelda games. It's just like, there's always something just different about every single one of them. They're always so good. Outside of the CDI games from way back in like the early 90s or whatever that was, there's not a bad Zelda game. They're always great.
I think I know what you're talking about. The ones with 3DO or something?
Yeah, whatever those. The knockoff Zelda, like the CD things. Those things were crap, but you know, those weren't real Zelda games. Yeah, they weren't a Nintendo.
No, they were something. I sat down actually on a panel at PAX East, and they were talking about that Zelda game. And randomly, the voice actor for Link showed up and just started talking. I'm like, oh my God, okay.
Wow.
Now we're in business.
It's funny
here.
If they also had the voice actor for the animated series, like, excuse me, princess.
Oh, that'd be great. My favorite game of all time, Super Metroid.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, it's ahead of its time.
I love Metroid. I love my Metroid.
Me too. Metroid is so awesome.
It's like anytime there's like a Metroidvania game, I'm like, I have to play it.
Yep.
Like I love.
I played the newer Metroid, Metroid
Dread.
Yes, Metroid Dread. Yeah. Thank you. I actually, you know what? I rage quit that one.
Yeah,
because I rage quit the final boss on that one. I was like, yep, this is bullshit. I even watched the video of like fighting it. I'm like, oh, there's no way I could have won this. This is an impossible boss fight.
Yeah, it's those fucking robots. They're all over the place, and you can't do anything about them. I mean, you can go invisible, and all of a sudden, as soon as you go uninvisible, then you're like, shit. Okay, now I got to fucking run for my life from this thing.
Yeah.
You can't fight it. You just have to run.
But I do know they're making another Metroid Prime game, so I'm like, woohoo.
Ooh, that could be fun. Those Metroid Prime games are fantastic.
I've missed those.
Yeah. Well, they did a remake recently, right? Like a remaster or something like that?
Yeah.
Yes. But I don't have the Switch.
It's not a new one, though. I'm like, I want a new one.
Yeah. Whole new story, all that good stuff. Yeah. Absolutely. We should get back into horror stuff, though, because we can talk video games for hours.
You could be on video games all day.
Yeah. This will turn into a video game podcast at some point, which, whatever. I'm fine with it. Corey, go for it.
Can you talk about your role as Player 2 in Stream and the Grinch in the Mean One? How'd those come to be?
Well, Player 2 happened because the Fuzz on the Lens guys, you know, they worked on Terrifier 1 and 2. So they, you know, had this whole script they were telling me even before we filmed Terrifier 2. They're like, hey, we got this other film we want to do. I think there's a part in there that would be great for you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, totally. Then, like, just who we were able to get for this cast was just amazing. Just like, you know, being on that set was crazy every single day. It's like, who's on set today? What legend from the horror world is here today? So it's crazy to also think that that was one of Tony Todd's last projects too, which is like, it's like, wow. Cause you know, he was supposed to, I think, have a big part to do in part two. And it's like, ah, geez, I think they got to go back to the drawing board now. That was a heartbreaker.
Yeah, judging it from how it ended.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made it seem like he was going to be a big deal. And like he was almost like he was going to be behind the whole thing. So that whole thing has to now be reworked. And I think his last movie is the new Final Destination coming out.
Yeah. Right? I think so.
Which is which is crazy if you think about it, because it's like that movie's very ominous when it comes to death. And here it is, a person who is deceased in the movie. Yeah. But obviously, kind of do poetic. The whole. It is exactly. It's kind of poetic. I was thinking the same thing, that life imitates art type deal. Yeah. But I've got a few more questions too. Actually, this is a little different. So we here at 30 Screams of Less love music and saw your role in the Ice Nine Kills song, A Work of Art, which makes us wonder, what kind of music do you listen to?
I'm weird. I'm an old fart at heart. I listen to a lot of the oldies, like, because I grew up with my parents, you know, anytime we took car trips, they were listening to like the 50s and 60s and 70s music. So I was like, I'm used to that. Of course, 80s rock I love because that, you know, that's the music of my youth, all the way through, like, you know, the 90s as well. So that's the kind of music I listen to. Also, a lot of musical theater, a lot of jazz and stuff like that as well, like blues and stuff like that. But more musical theater and, like, you know, rock music from the 50s through the 80s.
Okay, that makes sense. And, like, you started sounding like me for a minute, because when I was younger and I was driving around my mom, she would listen to a lot of the Motown stuff.
All that
music from the 50s, which is funny because she was born, like, later 50s. So I guess she's still like a 50 babies at heart.
That's and good then, music, like, though.
It really is. It really is. And then, like, in the 80s, I got this from my dad, which was glam metal and, like, you know, all that stuff. I grew up on that, too. So, and then naturally, you know, the progression was me being into heavy metal. So that's just how it happened. But I have a wide respect for, like, all music types, especially coming from, like, that Motown feeling stuff. But makes sense that you are into, like, the show tunes, things like that, because you ended up doing Broadway stuff and then working to where you are now. And, you know, that seems like the logical approach for a lot of the actors that are doing plays and such. Alan Rickman, he was another one. Like, his first movie is Die Hard.
Yeah.
Right? And he went from, like, doing plays to then Die Hard. And it was, like, one of the greatest roles of all time. And for a first role, unbelievable. Same with you.
So true.
Kind of the same, like, same thing, basically. You went from that, and then you went into, like, Art the Clown. And, I mean, Art the Clown isn't your first role. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely not. No. Big film role, but I've played so many roles beforehand. Stage plays and musicals.
Yeah, and voice acting too, right?
And voice acting, yes.
Yes, I did a little research. But
good for you.
Thanks. Did you do voice acting for video games, is it?
I did, like, years ago, I did some work before I joined SAG. I did, like, probably one of the most notoriously bad video games ever created, Ride to Hell Retribution.
Oh my God, okay.
Yeah.
I gotta look this up. Ride to Hell Retribution.
Oh God, it's got like a one review on most places. It's horrible. But it's like, it came out like 2 or 3 years after I recorded all my work for it. And like when I went in, they were selling it. It's like, this is going to be like Grand Theft Auto crossed with Sons of Anarchy. And it's before they made the Lost of the Damned DLC for GTA. So I was like, oh, wow, we're going to have like an open world biker gang type of game. This sounds awesome.
Right.
And then I think they just rushed everything at the last minute. It was like, oh, well, we're under contract to release this game. So they just rushed this piece of shit out. And it was like, I didn't even finish the game because it was just such a glitchy mess. And like, even like the cutscenes in it, like what we had recorded were not the actual scenes that you, like the whole setting for the scenes. Like that's not the whole setting for the scene. They cut out big chunks of dialogue. And then they used even like our practice takes. Like where I'm just reading the dialogue to myself and I'm like, oh, why are you using that? That sounds like shit. But it was horrible. It was just like, they just didn't care. They're like, well, we just got to put this thing out. So they put it out. And I'm like, oh my God, I hate it. I was so disappointed. But I still have my copy of that game because I keep it with me just to remind me of, you know, my humble beginnings in this industry. Yeah.
Speaking of video games, have you had a chance, do you have like beta involvement or anything with the Terrifier video game that's coming out?
No, I didn't even know about it until right before they announced it. And it was when we were in Spain for the premiere. The team for the game was out there and they took us out to lunch and I got to meet them. They showed me the trailer. I'm like, oh my God, this looks amazing. So I was very stoked about that. I love those old school, you know, side-scrolling brawlers like that. I used to spend so many hours in the arcade as a kid playing those types of games, like Ninja Turtles and Simpsons and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, this is so cool.
Hell yeah. I was actually just playing the Simpsons recently, like the one with the four players, right? And
yeah.
You're like, yeah. Yeah, that's
a
good one.
You can do like combo attacks with your other players. You know, like team up and like Bart and Lisa would like hold hands and like run around and clothesline people and stuff like that. Just
exactly. That game. So good. And also the Ninja Turtles one in the arcade. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I spent a lot of money. Actually, I spent a lot of my dad's money on that because we were kids and he just dropped us off the arcade and we did our thing.
So, oh, yeah.
That was our babysitter when he wanted to go out and do something. I'm looking at the screenshots from this game and, you know, it looked promising.
Yeah.
Based on like what I'm seeing, I could see the whole Grand Theft Auto thing and I could see like the whole open worldness to it. And it kind of looks like Manhunt.
It looks good,
but that's...
Yeah, the screenshots look fine. It's just the game itself is just a glitchy mess. It's horrible. The design's horrible.
That's awful.
I hate saying that about a project I worked on, but yeah, they really dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, that's too bad. It looks decent.
Could have been something so much better in that they had plans for it to be a huge franchise and everything. It just went...
Kind of like... You can't just release that back in those days. That was like PlayStation 3, I'm reading, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't just be releasing this on like console, and you can't update it, really. It's not like today where you have your digital games, and you could just get them updated to fix all these add all these patches and fix things and shit like that.
Yeah.
You can't do that with these games.
No, not at all. It's just like you got to release it as is and hope for the best.
Yeah, they dropped the ball. Damn.
Oh, they did big time. Big time. It's such a shame because there was so much potential for that series. I was like, oh my God.
It must be crazy to go back and think about that project there and now what Art the Clown is in. Like, obviously, you're getting your own video game, but you're in Call of Duty and everyone's clamoring for Dead by Daylight if that ever happens.
Oh my God. So I'm clamoring for Mortal Kombat. I want him to be DLC for Mortal Kombat one of these days.
Hey, they just got Ghostface. Why not Art?
Yeah, why not? It's just like he could be like a very Joker-like character from like the Injustice games where he's just pulling out different tricks and stuff like that. Because he's got that bag, so he can just pull anything out of that bag.
Oh,
right?
That would be
like
fun.
Joker's gun with the bang flag that comes out of it?
Yeah, so many possibilities. I'm like, I have a feeling it's going to happen one these days. Not on this version of Mortal Kombat, maybe the next game or something like that, I'm hoping.
I don't see why not. They've already been implementing a lot of those horror characters.
I know.
Yeah, why not?
Well, that's the thing. Like, why don't they just make a fighting game with all these horror characters? You know, I'm there not just go. Probably just trying to get all the licensing would be a pain in the butt, but I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be a fun thing to do. Have like the heroes and the villains from all these horror films duking it out. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, like Tommy versus Jason. Ooh,
yeah.
I would love that battle in a video game. That's another big fight battle at the end of a movie where like Friday the 13th part 6, which is arguably my favorite Friday the 13th. And Tommy is fighting Jason and they're on a rowboat and he's trying to get the chain hooked around his throat. And big fight battle right there. I love it.
That's great.
It's like one of my. Yeah, it's great. Shit, I got to get back to my questions here. like flipping between tabs. I'm looking at the Ride to Hell Retribution. I'm like, I wonder how much it goes for on eBay. It's like $23, $25. Oh, this
it's not worth that much even.
There's a sealed version for $46 on here.
Jesus.
Hey, games are worth a lot of money. I just sold one for $100.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't even sealed. It was just,
wow.
But yep. Hey, fuck yeah. It's $100 in my pocket. I'll take it.
Hell
I haven't
yeah.
played. I already played the game. So I'm like, hey, you know what? You can
buy
have
a new
it.
Game with that one.
Exactly. Even though they're very expensive these days, they're $75, $80. Some of them are going for 100 something.
But actually, if you look at it, you look at inflation now compared to like, if you take in, consider inflation from back in the 80s with the NES games, mm-hmm. those things, counting inflation, would be about at least $100 per game.
You're right. It makes sense. You can't have the same like price for decades until it's like, okay, we have to like raise the price here a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember paying $75 for Super Nintendo games back in the 90s, which then that's expensive.
Yeah.
That's out of control. Yeah. But that's what they were doing. Then they capped it to like $60, which everyone rejoiced.
Oh, yes. Like, very much so. There was much rejoicing.
Much rejoicing.
Okay. David, can you tell us anything about Screamboat and Circus of the Dead 2?
Yeah. I don't really know much about Circus of the Dead 2, so I can't really say anything there. But Screamboat's coming out in theaters in January. Mm-hmm. I played the infamous Mouse Willie going around a boat killing people, and I am the size of a little mouse in this. I'm like a little mutant mouse. So I'm not like a 6'2" me in a suit going around. I'm a like about 3 apples high mouse going around and killing people. So I had a lot of fun. We shot on, well, they shot originally on the Statline Ferry that, you know, Pete Davidson has. And
really?
I read about that recently.
Yeah. They literally shot on that thing, so they put that to good use.
So was that you in the cameo on Bupkis, by the way?
Yes. Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's awesome. I saw
that
pop up and I was like, no fucking way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, so I came here to L.A. and they put me in the big suit, and it's about 4 hours of makeup every day. And I was on a soundstage doing motion capture work. Not motion capture. They had the digital projection, like they do with the Mandalorian and stuff like that. So they could digitally project the actual film. And so I could interact with what was going on screen. And they could make me the same size as what I should be. And so we did a lot of forced perspective with that, and I had mm-hmm. oversized props. So we were doing like the Honey, I Shrunk the Kid thing with it. And it was a lot of fun. It's really silly. And they even like have a full orchestration for this movie. The director sent me a clip a few weeks ago where they were recording the music with a 40-piece orchestra, which was amazing to hear the Steamboat Willie theme with a 40-piece orchestra. And then they put their own little stink on it, put some like horror elements in there. I was like, oh, this is gonna be, it's gonna be fun. It's like, it's a very, very tongue-in-cheek type of movie. It's a horror comedy. I say it's not like Terrifier. It's all over the top comedy. Just it knows exactly what it is. Just like how the Mean One was. It's the same team. So it's just like that over the top. Just like we know we're silly. Let's just have fun and make a silly horror movie about a killer mouse going on a boat. But there's so much Disney references in this movie too. So it's made with a lot of love for the Disney company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually like at first when they told me about this, I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. Yeah, sure, I'll do it. But I wasn't expecting too much for the script because like, okay, it's going to be like a mouse going around killing people. Then I read the script like, actually, this is a really good script. This is a really good plot. It actually makes sense why he's doing what he's doing. And there's so much love to like, because I'm a big Disney freak too. So I was like, there's so much love to that company in this movie. So I think people are going to have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, you got to pay a little homage to Disney. If you're going to have that movie, you have to add some of those elements in there. And obviously, it's got to be hard to like add those elements too, because you got to worry about copyright infringement stuff, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. They've had a whole legal team making sure things were okay, because it's parody. So as long as you're parody, you can get away with a lot more, especially when you just make good note. This is parody. This is not the actual characters from Disney.
Oh, chill. Good call. Okay. Yeah. Well, that makes sense then, where you can do a lot of these things. Because we know that Steamboat Willie went into public domain, but I'm sure Disney would still have some sort of say, like, hey, no, you can't do these things because we still have some sort of right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they don't just be like, oh, forfeit. You know, Disney's got to do something. They'll do something. So, I didn't really realize that about parody, is that you can do those things. But, I mean, it kind of makes sense with the, what the movies we were talking about earlier.
The scary movies or the movies, whatever, you know, all those, they are always constantly parodying other movies. And that's what this is just a parody. And it's for fun.
Yeah, it's for fun.
It's just for fun. And that's the thing, is I think people forgot how to just have fun with horror movies. And that's what we're trying to do with this. Like, let's just have fun. Let's make a silly, fun little slasher film with a mouse.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there's a thin line.
Oh, man. Does he talk in the movie?
Oh, boy.
You'll find out.
Okay.
I feel like there's a thin line between comedy and horror, if you think about it. A lot of horror movies tend to have a lot of comedy elements. And kind of going back to Friday the 13th Part 6, there's a lot of comedy elements in that, too. And I think like in the later movies, they started adding a lot of that in there. So I think they go really well together, comedy and horror. So
I think so, too. And I think people have just forgotten that. And that's because it seems like so many horror movies in the past decade or so have just been so, so serious. I'm like, have some fun, guys. Just have a little fun.
Exactly. It's all about having fun, both of them.
You can have those serious ones. That's totally fine, like the Jordan Peele serious ones and stuff like that. But just have some fun.
Yeah. I think it makes it scarier if you throw in comedy elements, because it takes you down a little bit. It like levels you out, and then you come in with a bang and you're like, oh, well, there's my adrenaline again kicking in, you know, just freaking out. So you need to kind of have those elements, or like just lighter elements or something. Doesn't need to be like slapstick comedy, but you got to have something like that.
Yeah.
Just like wean people
down.
That's
why the original Scream works so well. Wes Craven knew how to blend comedy and horror very well. The same with Sam Raimi.
Yes. There's a lot of comedy elements to
Evil Dead.
To Evil Dead, for sure. Absolutely. But the newer one that came out, I mean, there is some comedy elements to it, but nowhere near as much as like Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness. Because let's be honest, Army of Darkness is Evil Dead 3.
Yeah.
We all know it. We're not stupid. But the movie executives were like, no, we want to have its own dedicated movie. It's like, yeah, come on. It's Ash.
Like, come on.
Come on.
It's like, I don't know anybody that doesn't think of it as Evil Dead 3.
Yeah, everyone thinks of it like that way. I love that movie.
Yeah. Oh, so, I do too. It's fantastic.
It's great. Absolutely amazing. Love it. We recently just saw a Steamboat Willie movie, and we're like, ouch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like shitting on anyone's work, but that one just wasn't for us. It was called The Mousetrap. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen the trailer, and I thought the same. It just looks like they just slapped a really cheap mask on somebody and just like, okay. It has nothing to do, like, in the vein of Steamboat Willie or anything like that. It's just like, eh.
Funny thing is, that's exactly what it was.
Yep, that's exactly
it. It was a dude wearing a mask.
Yep. Yeah,
it's one of the few movies I've given a one star to.
Yeah, I don't blame it. It seems like a cheap cash in. Like, that's what I like about our version, is actually steeped in a lot of lore. There's a lot of lore in this movie.
See, that's what I like, in that The Mousetrap just felt like exactly like that, like a quick cash grab or first to market type deal, right?
Yep.
So, oh shit, this went public domain. We have to hop on it. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. That's fair. But they had all the tools to do it and just didn't capitalize on it. I mean, I didn't see an on-screen kill to an hour in the movie.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And at that point, there was like 15 minutes left.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So what's the... You're just sitting... It's boring.
Yeah, I know. I was like, what the hell? Are we going to see anything happen? It was very odd. I wanted to like it. I think the second one's going to be better, because I think they're introducing
mini in it.
But they're making a second one?
And they alluded to it at the end.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to hear our podcast and go, okay, we know what we got to do now, and then it's going to be infinitely better. Hey, you learn from your mistakes.
You do. But I was like, I'm just like, I guess I'm biased because I know that we have actual lore in a whole story, and it makes sense, and it's totally pertains to the actual old what it's based on.
Right.
And that's like, that's how you should be doing these things. It's like, come on. It's like, I don't have a lot of faith in this Popeye movie coming out either, because I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, I saw the trailer for that. An abandoned spinach factory?
Yeah, I'm like, there's no Bluto, there's no olive oil, there's none of that. It's just Pop. I'm just like, no. That's like, give me the old Robin Williams Popeye movie. Thank you.
Great movie. They built a whole city for that, and it's just abandoned.
Know. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. It's still sitting there today.
What a production. Turn that thing into an Airbnb or something.
Yeah.
Think how many people would stay there. It'd be great.
Oh, no, I definitely would. I totally would. I'm like, oh, my God, because I loved that movie as a kid.
Yeah, I'd partake. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I have just one more question here for you now that I think about it.
Cool.
What has been your favorite horror movie and non-horror movie?
Like recently?
Just whenever.
Probably my favorite of all of them is Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3 Dream Warriors.
Oh, yeah, that's a banger.
I just love that movie.
Well,
I mean, I love, there's so many great ones, though, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, Exorcist, Omen, Scream. But, like, recently, it was like 2 years ago it came out. I loved The Menu. I thought that was really good.
Oh, yes.
I love that. Both of us. Love that. I recently saw Smile 2, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was better than Smile 1. And I haven't been able to see Maxine yet, but I've loved the first two of X and Pearl. And, of course, Evil Dead Rise. I saw that last year. Really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Did you see they announced the title of the second movie yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very interested. Very interested. I'm like, okay, burn. Okay, we'll see what happens here. And then I, of course, just saw the new trailer for 28 Years Later. And I'm like, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I was like, I got to wait till next June for that. Well, I've already waited 17 years, so fine.
They should have waited 28 years for it.
Yeah, I know, but oh, well.
A lost opportunity. It's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Well, I'll stick around till 28 centuries later. We'll stick around for that.
Yeah.
That's, that's what, like 2,000 years, something like that? 200? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah, see? But what about non-horror movies? Because those were all like horror realm. I mean, the Menu, by the way,
is Thanksgiving in there too, because I really enjoyed Thanksgiving.
Yep. Yeah,
I was cackling throughout that movie at the kills. I was like,
I love how that opened with a Black Friday scene, because I was like,
oh, that was so
good.
That was such a good scene. Just that image of the cart bashing her repeatedly in the head while she's just lying there on the ground. I was like, this is great. Good. But you could tell that the studios had come in and told Eli to hold back, because you look at the original trailer they did during Grindhouse, and it's like, oh, man, if they could have let Eli really do his thing with this, oh, my God. But who knows now with Terrifier 3, I think we've given the studio system a kick in the pants, and we've given these other directors clout now to say, hey, let us do our thing like the Terrifier guys did.
Yeah, let us cook. Is that the saying?
Yeah,
let us cook.
Like, you guys blew up a bunch of kids in the third movie. Come on, let us do it.
Yep.
Yep. We've actually gotten some directors that have actually thanked us. They're like, thank you, now we actually have something to go to the studios and argue about. So I'm like, good. Let's get back to basics. Get back to making movies that people want to see.
Right. And I think the whole reasoning behind it is they're trying to obviously promote to like a wider audience. R-rated films, obviously, that's going to be like a bigger release. Same with PG-13. PG-13, obviously, they want to get as many people in there. But from what we've experienced, horror movies with PG-13 ratings, for the most part, they're usually best off being R. But
Unless it's something like, Monster Squad or something like that, where you can bring kids to it or something like that.
Hell yeah, that's a good one. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Corey, you've seen that movie, right?
Monster Squad? Yeah, of course.
With all Werewolf.
yeah.
Wolfman's got nards, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Corey, if you didn't see that movie, then I'd say you're free to leave the podcast.
Get out of here.
Wow. I finally got fired.
You didn't get fired because you've seen it. So for Terrifier 3, obviously that's unrated. So you had a little bit more play regarding what you can put in there. Because
right.
with a lot of these PG-13 R-rated movies, they all have sponsors or like backers, all this stuff. I mean, yeah. I swear, Smile 2, the amount of Voss water that was drank in that movie.
Oh my God.
Drunk,
that was like a character in the movie.
Yeah, it was like a character in the movie. And I'm like, Voss had to bankroll like a good portion of this. So like, that probably wouldn't happen with an
let's do
like
some Reese's for or Kit Kat for Terrifier 4 then, because then I can just get a bunch of that on set and constantly snack out the whole entire time.
You never know. Hey, they might actually maybe accommodate it for the next film because they see the success behind Terrifier 3 and they're like, well, okay, maybe we can get down on that and you won't have to sacrifice any of the unrated stuff.
Yeah.
So you never know. Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, my favorite non-horror movie of all time for me, Ghostbusters, hands down.
Mm, okay. Yeah.
Love that.
That's a great one. Mine's Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That movie
is a perfect
flawless.
Film.
It is a perfect film. I can't think of anything wrong about that movie.
Nope.
I got the vinyl soundtrack for that very recently, actually.
Oh yeah, it's a great soundtrack. I used to have that on cassette tape when I was a kid.
Oh, geez. Like that song of like Bob Hodgkins at the end where he's trying to knock the weasels dead.
Mm-hmm. The merry-go-round broke down. Yeah.
Yes. That whole scene is amazing. Amazing scene. Like the whole thing. I'm going to watch that later. I've got time to kill. It's a perfect film. Corey, if we're not playing Marvel Rivals, I'm going to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Blaze!
Hi, me, Eddie.
Next time! What are these, Tweety Birds?
Oh, so good. That movie holds up.
Oh, it's great.
So, David, how do you manage to get into character and out of character? Is it difficult to disassociate with them?
No. I do my work before I come to set, and so now I know where art lives, so I can just totally turn them on, turn them off when I have to, at the flip of a switch, basically. It's very easy.
That's awesome, because that's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, like being on stage, having an alter ego, all that stuff. So art could be basically your alter ego, and you could just turn them off.
Oh, yeah.
And
especially at this point.
Yeah. I would think, though, like some of those scenes, those kills, it's like it's hard to like disassociate yourself because you're probably like, Jesus Christ, I did that. Wow. Okay.
Well, I just know it's fake. So I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. Like it brings me back to the stories of like talking about Joker again, hearing about what Heath Ledger had to do to get into the mindset of being the Joker.
Yeah. Well, even when I've done the Joker, it's I can easily get in and out because I understand the character in my head. So it's like as soon as I understand the character in my head, I can just turn it on, turn it off. I don't have to do the whole method acting thing or anything like that. I might have to take like a second or two just to get into the character. But other than that, I don't have to do anything other than just go, okay. Like what helped me understand art in the first film was, it was just a very simple line that the cat lady had where she says he does this all because he thinks it's funny. I'm like, oh, that explains everything about him now. It's like, that's how warped and demented this guy is. He thinks killing people's funny. And it's pure entertainment for him. And I'm like, okay, there we go.
Perfect. You're a funny guy. So it's just, you just put a little your flair into art. And we all see that anyways with the mannerisms, the comedy, like the silent comedy, basically. Like kind of back in the old days where you'd had your silent films and like the comedies and you had to just use your imagination on what they would be saying or reacting and stuff.
And that's what I do. I make up my own dialogue in my head. So I have something to go off beat by beat wise, so I can flesh out where things are supposed to go for the scene. Things happen organically that way. My face reacts to whatever I'm thinking in my head, so it all works.
Really? That's how it works? Okay. Yeah. Actors have their own different ways of doing things. Like, I know Robert Downey Jr., I heard for him to remember his lines, he turns it into like songs, and it's easy for him to remember. Interesting. Like,
that
and
makes
it makes sense because, because we all can sing a lot of songs and we just remember it, but like reading lines off a piece of paper, I'm going to say nowhere near as easy as remembering music, because music, you have like this whole thing you can kind of gravitate to with the guitars and drums and whatever, all that beats. That's how he learns. But
that's cool.
It is pretty cool. Corey, I think you have one more question, don't you?
Yeah. So one more question and then we'll let you get back to Black Myth Wukong. What do you enjoy and what little free time that you have?
Of course, video games, as we said earlier. I definitely enjoy my video game time. I love reading. I love watching movies or TV shows when I get a chance. I also like to build Legos. I'm right now in the middle of building the X-Mansion, which I've been having fun with. I do a little bit every day. And I'm like, oh, this is nice. It's just a nice way to unwind and zen out for a little bit. Or just going out with the girlfriend or other friends and stuff like that and hanging out. So very simple.
That sounds like a great time. Yeah. I've been wanting to get into puzzles personally. I have a horror puzzle that I've been wanting to put together and maybe day by day, put in a few pieces, kind of walk away, whatever. And then just see it come to life. Yeah, it's fun.
I love to build things. I've always been like, I'm even like that with furniture. It's like anytime I get like new shelves or something like that, I'm like, woohoo, I get to build something.
I don't want to do any of that. I put together.
I get together for people.
Yeah, I gotta know. Did you help Phil build the tank? Because we talked to Phil once and he told us about the tank in his backyard. Did you help him build that?
No, I didn't get to help build any of that, unfortunately.
Oh.
They just assume I'm the actor. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. So they never invited me to come build things. And I even told them, like, I can come help build the set. And I'm like, no, Dave, no. I'm like, I literally built sets my whole entire teenage years doing community theater. I built so many sets. I know how to use a screwdriver and nails and how to measure things off and use a saw.
There you go. Now we sell you. We sell you everyone on the fact that you can actually help with these things. So now they're just like, oh, okay, well, we can have a set builder and an actor in one shot. All right. So David, thank you so much for spending this time with us today. We've had a blast. And
thank you. This has been fun.
This has been fun. We both had a really great time talking with you. And again, we've been wanting to get you on the podcast for a very long time. So this is huge for us. And we can't wait to see you in Steamboat Willie. It's going to be fucking great. And Terrifier 4, I'm sure at some point, whenever that comes out, we'll be there watching it in the theaters. If the theater is not shut down because of rats.
Actually kind of funny. The theater we saw Terrifier 3 at, the one I was talking about earlier, got shut down. They got shut down today because someone saw rats the size of cats running around all over the floors and over people's popcorn and shit.
That's crazy.
How funny is that? Because Terrifier 3 has rats in it.
That's crazy. The rats are so sweet, too.
I know. I thought Corey was messing with me because it read like a Dr. Seuss book.
I saw it on NBC Boston. It must be real.
It must be, of course. God, you read it on the internet. Of course it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Exactly. Yeah, see. David, again, thank you so much for spending this time with us. You've been awesome. We would love to just keep in touch with you because... Yeah. You're fun as hell, man. And
who knows,
what we like to do, I don't know if you drink at all, if you partake in wine or anything.
Occasionally?
Okay. Well, if you're ever in the New Hampshire, Massachusetts area, we'd be more than down to buy you a drink.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Again, thank you so much, David. We hope you have a great night.
Thank you. Y'all take care and have a good one, all right?
Thank you, David.
You too. Thank you. All right.
Bye.
All right, everyone, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on all podcast platforms so we can get some more exposure. Of course, tell your friends. Both our intro and outro music are courtesy of Andrew Scott Bell. Be sure to check out Andrew on all major streaming platforms. And if you see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on vinyl in the wild, be sure to pick it up. We're also part of the Shining Wizards Network. Be sure to visit ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. They're an awesome podcast network ranging from wrestling to heavy metal, horror, all that good stuff. So check that out. Visit 30ScreamsOrLess.com for all previous episodes and transcripts to go with those episodes. Also, check out BeardOctane.com for their whole line of grooming supplies. And be sure to use the code 30Screams10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And if there's anything you want us to review, send an email to 30screamsorless@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. Use hashtag 30screamsorless. And also, we have some awesome merch for sale on our website, so definitely check that out. If you go to our website, at the very top, there's a shop link. Click that link, and you'll see all sorts of shirts, hats, mugs, things like that. If you buy it, it helps going towards our hosting costs. I'm Steve.
I'm Corey.
And thanks for listening to 30 Screams or Less. And don't forget to drink your beans.